Support for Valley Edition comes from the James Irvine Foundation, Cahuilla Delta Medical Center, and Kaiser Permanente.
This is Valley Edition, FM 89's weekly look at the issues that matter to the residents of the San Joaquin Valley.
Hello, I'm Juanita Stevenson, and welcome to Valley Edition. On our program today, trying to balance academic and athletic programs with shrinking dollars, and why universities scramble to get into big-time conferences, how this is all impacting Fresno State. We talked to Fresno State President John Welty, Ed Dunkel, the incoming chair of the Bulldog Foundation, and Fresno Bee columnist Bill McEwen. Also, the president of Cal State University Bakersfield talks about that university's move to Division I sports. Plus, Fresno's poverty rate is up. We talk to the agency directors who are on the front lines of helping those in need. But first, a week ago, Fresno State fired longtime football coach Pat Hill. Despite Hill's accomplishments, ticket sales were down, and the football team was not winning enough to keep fans in the stands. All this happening as the university preps for a move to the Mountain West Conference, and students struggle under the weight of increasing fees. We talked to FSU President John Welty about the ongoing struggle to balance the desire for a competitive athletic program and academics. Thanks so much, Dr. Welty, for joining us. We appreciate you taking the time to talk to us today.
Good to be with you.
There's almost always been a tension on campuses between academic and sports programs, people who feel that sports aren't. And the mission of an academic institution, does the state's current fiscal crisis and the growth of sports programs, are they making this worse?
Well, I think obviously at a time when there are reduced resources, it does create more tension among everyone who are in the need of, you know, resources for programs. Obviously, in many cases, academic programs don't necessarily compete directly with athletic programs for funding because a large share of an athletic program is funded through ticket revenue, sponsorships, private support, and in other areas. But there is always, I think, an exacerbation of the tension when you're in a period of constraining resources.
Well, last year, the Knight Commission said that the growth of collegiate spending on athletics grew at an average of 4 to 11 times greater than spending on academics at those same institutions. Now, is this sustainable, and what can universities do to bring those numbers closer together?
Well, I think it's it is going to be very hard for universities to sustain that kind of growth. Although, unfortunately, I think in the past year we've seen huge TV contracts go to some of the larger athletic programs, and that's just served to create a situation of the rich getting richer and the poor getting poorer in Division I athletics.
And that makes it difficult for other universities to compete, doesn't it, when you have something like that?
It does, most definitely. It is a very difficult environment right now to deal with.
But many people will say that a successful, well-funded sports program is a great marketing tool and a recruiting tool for university and its academic programs. Is that still true?
Well, I think it is accurate that athletic programs do help to improve the visibility for the university. And I think while there's been an ongoing debate about how much a difference it makes, I think it is accurate that when you are on national television, you do get a greater visibility, and there are benefits derived from that.
Now, over the last few months, or basically this has been going on over a few years here at Fresno State, we've seen both the academic programs and now the athletic department both experience shrinking revenue. What kind of impact is that having on the university?
Well, the dramatic reduction in state funding for the university has had a very significant impact on us. I mean, it's caused us to make a number of changes. We have 300 fewer employees this year than we had in the fall of 2008. We've made a number of other changes and are in the process of looking at other changes we may have to make to deal with this declining investment by the state in higher education. And also, part of that reduction in resources has been made up by fee increases, which has had an impact on students that have to pay those.
And what about the shrinking revenue for the athletics department?
Well, when you have that occurring, it makes it more difficult because, again, where the department is very dependent upon ticket sales and sponsorships and private support, it makes it even harder to sustain the level of programming that we're offering at this point.
And that is so true. Unlike an academic program, athletics, specifically our football program, it really does depend on public support, you know, from the ticket sales donations. So if the public wants a high-quality program, don't they have to kind of pay for it?
Well, yes. I think if we're going to continue and to sustain a Division I program, it is necessary to have that public support, and without it, it will be hard over time to be able to sustain a program.
To have that kind of a program, you know, people want a winning team, and all this kind of plays into it that, you know, you have to spend money on a coach, you have to spend money on recruiting certain athletes. So this all comes into play, and you can't have one without the other.
Well, that is correct. I mean, I think you do have to have the support. I think that important to recognize that you're not going to win all the time and every year is not going to be a great year, but that if you want a program that is committed to having student-athletes graduate as a commitment to integrity, there needs to be an ongoing support for that program in order to sustain it.
Earlier, you talked a little bit about students facing tuition increases, and Fresno State raised its own student fees in part to kind of help fund athletics and move to the Mountain West Conference. You know, how do you explain that to students who are already struggling to pay fees and find classes? Is something like this in their best interest? And basically, can we afford that move?
Well, I think we can afford the move because it will, over time, actually generate more revenue for us. The TV contracts and the conference revenue that we'll derive from the Mountain West will be substantially greater than what occurred with the WAC. So it in one sense, you have to make an investment now in order to really realize that gain over the next several years.
Even for other students who may not be involved in athletics at all, and they've already seen their fees go up, how can you explain to them that this is in their best interest as well?
Well, I think a strong Division I athletic program does contribute to the overall perception of the university. It does really add value to a student's degree. And while it's hard to, you know, actually quantify the dollar amount, the fact of the matter is there is some value, I think, derived from a Division I program.
There really has been a lot of instability in college sports right now. What we've seen over the last few years, many colleges, including Fresno State, been scrambling to find new conferences. Is this a good thing for colleges?
Well, I don't frankly think all the shifting that's gone on in the last year and a half has been good for intercollegiate athletics, and particularly the most recent shifts to the Big East by Boise State and San Diego State, I think in the long run will probably not prove to be advantageous for them. But it unfortunately, many of these changes are driven by TV contracts and the desire to generate more revenue, but it's not been, frankly, the best period for intercollegiate athletics.
And, you know, and there could be another wrench kind of thrown in the whole process with this, because there are some who are calling for the NCAA to pay student-athletes. Do you think student-athletes should be paid?
I do not, no. But I recognize there's that increasing call, and I think it will be an ongoing debate, but I do not support paying student-athletes.
Now, the NCAA is considering allowing student-athletes to be paid around $2,000. You know, is that something Fresno State can afford?
Well, it will be another burden on us, and obviously if we want to compete for Division I athletes, we probably will have to pay it, although that will be a conference decision on whether we actually make that addition.
You know, if other colleges in larger conferences begin to do this, does that make the playing field even more unequal for universities like Fresno State?
Yes, I think it does. It certainly makes it more difficult, and I think it's unfortunate that football has gotten out of control, unlike what's occurred with basketball, where there's greater revenue sharing as a result of the TV contracts that have come in.
What is it going to take? Because it seems like we're at a juncture now when you look at the budget cuts and you look at the fact that Fresno State may be looking at having to pay more money to get another coach. What is it going to take for Fresno State to move forward with its athletic programs?
Well, I think we need to continue to focus on developing as strong a program as we can to build support from the community, and stay committed to student-athletes graduating and running a program with integrity. If we do that over a period of time, I think we can sustain a Division I program.
We have seen some schools, just because of the cost, they've had to cut certain major sports programs. Is that something the CSU could be looking at, as schools, some cutting their football programs?
Well, indeed, there are several CSU schools have dropped football over the last 10 to 15 years, and there's only really three Division I programs left in the California State University at the present time. I don't know that anybody's contemplating cutting football at this point, but the pressure will continue, I think.
Thank you, Dr. Rolte, for your time. We really appreciate it.
Okay, great. Thanks.
Now joining us to continue the discussion is Fresno Bee columnist Bill McEwen at Ed Dunkel, the vice chair of the Bulldog Foundation. Thank you both for coming in this morning. Bill, in a recent column, you ask the question, where does Fresno State want to take its athletic program? Well, it appears athletic director Thomas Bay has laid out a plan, at least for football, and it calls for spending more money. Is that going to be enough?
Well, that will help make the Bulldogs competitive in the Mountain West Conference. And Juanita, I would point out that I asked that question of athletic director Thomas Bay later, and he spelled out exactly the path he sees Fresno State on, which is that its goal is to advance up the ladder, let's say ultimately to a BCS conference, and the school believes the way to do that is to fund their athletic programs at a level where they will win conference championships on a fairly regular basis. So there's some clarity to that. But I would also say that Fresno State is in a position where I think it's trying to tread water and hold on a bit and then try and figure out this very complicated and rapidly changing college athletic landscape.
Yes, it is, because you know, this is something we all learned after Coach Pat Hill was let go, was just how little money in comparison to everybody else Fresno State was really spending.
And Coach Pat Hill would ask, why wasn't he funded? Because he points to $15 million in buildings with the money raised by he and a handful of others, and also pretty good record over his 15 years and very high graduation rate, taking it from 22% to 85%. So when they have those NCAA commercials talking about student athletes and emphasizing the student first, I think we've seen at Fresno State what's more important, and that's the athlete part.
And, you know, and talking about that, when we see this debate about, you know, the spending on academics compared to athletics, but that is because they want a winning athletic program. But Fresno State also did try to turn things around and focus on the athlete. So can you do both? Can you have high academics and then also win? Because it seems like we corrected some of the other problems in the football and program and other programs. But then
at the very biggest programs, it's very possible to have high graduation rates and great academic support and also first-class athletic programs. But you have to start looking at the budgets of those schools where, you know, the University of Texas, you're talking about an athletic budget over $100 million.
Bringing in Mr. Dunkel, how can we compete with that? How are we going to, you know, get that dollars? The foundation has been a great asset and great support to Fresno State, but we're talking lots of money, and is it hard to raise that out there?
Well, especially in this economy, it's become more difficult, and our goal and mission is to fund the student athlete scholarship, and it's definitely become more difficult. Well, with the economy the way it is, but we're trying to build an interest and build that fan base back up and get the people, get those heinies in the seats. And that's what really helps push our program, build some interest, and get people in there.
Juanita, I would point out that Fresno State's athletic department may be most dependent of any in the country on community support. When you start looking at the numbers, it's really the community that enabled Fresno State to distinguish itself from some other CSU campuses that have had to de-emphasize athletics. And now with this down economy and football expectations not being met, that's put more of a squeeze, and President Welty reacted by raising the fees for students. But even at the raised level, the student fee for athletics at Fresno State is significantly lower than it is even at some CSUs that don't play Division I athletics.
Right. We're going to be talking to the president at Cal State Bakersfield. It's been – they started their climb to try to get into D1 sports 5 or 6 years ago, and the students voted to increase their fees because they wanted to support that. I mean, because we all see it, that, you know, students can complain about, not enough money being spent on academics. But everybody wants a competitive sports program.
Absolutely. And, you know, as in relation, as Bill had alluded to, San Diego State, their fees are much higher than at Fresno State for their student fees to support the program. In the WAC, we are one of the lowest schools as far as student fees going to the athletic program.
So, as Bill was saying, if we, if our community really supports and gets behind and helps with raising money, we saw that they kind of turned away when the football team wasn't performing the way everyone kind of wanted it to, and they started losing. So, what I'm saying is they expect to have a winning team and a winning coach.
Well, yes. And I would hope eventually we become true fans fanatic, meaning you support the team win, lose, or draw. Hope it'd be great to have that atmosphere. I've been fortunate enough to go to Ole Miss and Texas A&M and some of those schools and look at what they have there. It's just an incredible atmosphere where the people, of course, they want to win too. And there's, you know, if they're not, they're upset. But they're just true fans, and they love their program. And
no matter if they're down, they stick with them.
Right.
And that's what we kind of see missing here, and not just in football. You see it in basketball. You see it in the other sports. It was just like baseball. You know, it's not a sport that had a lot of people showing up, but as soon as they, you know, win the World Series, everybody's there, and they love them, and they want to be a part of that.
Right. Yeah, it's interesting to see, sit in the seats. It seems like it's more of an event here locally that, you know, people are leaving in the third, end of the third quarter, beginning of the fourth, even if it's a close game, want to beat the crowd out. So,
and Juanita, we'd be remiss in the fact that we've been talking about this with 20 minutes, including with President Welty, and we've not mentioned the word television. and it's television revenue that is driving this arms race in college athletics.
Right.
Huge amounts of money, and it's also driving this conference realignment because teams are jockeying to get into the strongest conference so they can get the biggest dollars. When the Pac-12 expanded from 10 to 12 teams, it's annual. Each school in the conference now will get $21 million a year just in television revenue. That's before gate receipts, selling tickets, booster contributions, and everything else. So that is what's really changing this. And I also want to point out that two Saturdays ago, a game was played, and it involved the University of Houston and Southern Mississippi. Neither school is in one of these big money conferences called the Bowl Championship Series Conference because Houston lost that game. It cost the conference $11 million. Wow. So we're still in a situation in which athletes or college athletes who are supposed to be amateurs are put in situations where their play, one play in a game, can make $11 million difference.
And so when you look at that, you see why colleges are really competing to and jockeying to get in one conference over another because they can bring in a lot of revenue to that particular university.
Otherwise, they're left scrambling and trying to pick up the pieces and having to make difficult decisions then about what sports they cut and whether they continue to play a sport like football, which is very expensive.
It is. And, you know, really, I was kind of surprised. I want everybody to know that, you know, I'm not a sports nut, but I was really surprised when Dr. Welty said, there are only three CSUs that still have a football program.
That's correct. The pressures are mounting, and you alluded to earlier about the $2,000, basically a stipend for athletes, and that's more pressure on the program that we're going to have to meet that. We're going to have to pay that, or we're not going to be able to compete with the other schools. So.
Well, in talking about that, as you just mentioned, what student athletes, we see the NCAA, a poor athlete can be penalized just for, eating lunch, and yet they basically, when they're in college, they're giving up their whole life to that sport. They can get injured. So it goes back to, that question, should we be paying these athletes at some level?
Well, America has not been honest with itself about how it pertains to men's basketball and college football, because if you were to rank the popularity of sports in America, the National Football League would be number one. College football would be number two. Major League Baseball would be number three. College men's basketball would be number four. And yet two of these four leagues, which serve as farm teams for major leagues, are called amateur. And they're amateur in the sense that an athlete gets a scholarship, gets a little training table money, a little incidental money. Meanwhile, the athletic director at the school may make $1 million a year. The head coach coaching the athlete will make $2 or $3 million a year and also have the freedom to move from job to job as he chooses. And yet the athlete, if he chooses to leave school, he's going to have to sit out a year. There's going to be a penalty of some kind. And so that's what this $2,000 giving to athletes is about, is trying to address the inequity of that.
Okay. It is an inequity, but who knows if that, that's really enough. Do you expect that to happen at some point? There's so much talk about it. Do you all expect that to happen?
Well, there'll be pressure there, but I don't know. I don't know if the overall public will want that or wish for that. It is still a college experience, and people are out there. It's for a college experience. They are getting their scholarship, and they are getting the college experience. So, and not. Very few will go on to the pros, so they are getting benefit out of this.
Okay. Well, also, they could arrange that students get something up on graduation. I mean, there's a way to get around all that.
Oh, I agree. That's a very good motivation, I think, is to provide, let's say, a bonus for graduating from the institution.
Okay. Well, talking about Fresno State, from what I read, their budget, they were $700,000 in the hole. And that it was said that the foundation is going to need to raise $400,000 to get them through. You ready to do that? You think that's something that you're going to be able to do?
Well, it's going to be a challenge. We're hoping we don't have to dig into the endowment money and what's there basically for a rainy day. Hopefully, we'll see some kind of excitement with a new coach that maybe people will come in and want to see what's happening with the new coach and buy some tickets. So that's the big hope.
And the foundation has said that they're willing to pay for that new coach. And as we –
Well, actually, it was the university has set the parameters, not the foundation.
The foundation pays for scholarships.
Okay, so. Well, I think you said that you'd be willing to support that as far as understanding that the university is going to have to pay more. And we just saw that. I think I don't know if it's been announced, but one of the people – Fresno State was looking at Malcolm Wayne. Now he's going to Colorado State for over a million. Yeah. So are we going to be looking at something in that range to get the kind of coach?
We're not going to be able to afford that.
Right.
Yeah, but we're going to have to go higher than what we're doing now. It's just to compete. So that's and then, you know, there was a lack of a recruiting budget that hampered efforts. So that's got to be ramped up to be able to go out there and get the college athlete here that will make us be able to compete.
Okay. And one thing that's put a significant strain on fundraising efforts for Fresno State Athletics for the foundation is the dramatic increase in tuition. And so if the Bulldog Foundation goes out and raises the same amount of money that it raised the year before, it funds fewer scholarships because the cost, I mean, they're dramatically larger than they have been in the past.
That's absolutely correct. And then now with this additional it looks like it could very possibility the high possibility of the $2,000. That's going to be another pressure on us that we have to come out and get that money somehow.
Yeah, it's kind of hard to do all this happening, the move to the Mountain West and everything else, right in the middle of the budget cuts and the increase in student fees.
Well, we will realize more revenue from the Mountain West Conference. They have a television contract that gives more money, so that is, ultimately that will be a benefit to us. Right now, we're not recognizing that because we had to pay our way out of the WAC, and you don't get that for the first year or so. But once we get into the Mountain West next year, then we will realize more income. So that will help, and that will help fund some of the things that we need, such as the recruiting budget and maybe a little bit more money for the coach.
Yeah, but at this stage of the game, you know, with finding a new coach and then moving to the Mountain West, are you going to be able to recruit? I mean, will the coach be able to recruit the way they'd like?
Well, that's always the question. You know, that's why hiring a new coach, whether it's for football or men's basketball, is just so very important, and timing's a big part of it. When that coach is announced, he's going to have to go to the names on Fresno State's list and do a salesman job and talk about what his program's going to be and the advantages of coming there. So he's going to have to hit the ground running because NCAA rules actually very quickly at the end of the month forbid contact between a coach and a recruit until early next year.
And also, Fresno State fickle fans being able, you know, to stick out what is a building program, a rebuilding program.
Well, again, hopefully we're fans, and hopefully there is some patience there, and this will help build some enthusiasm and come out and see what the program has to offer. You know, just the whole game, the whole atmosphere is so fun. It'd be great to have those seats filled and come to the tailgates and just get that atmosphere going again.
And Juanita, we haven't talked about this, but the Mountain West Conference in football, because of the performance of the schools on the field, has asked the NCAA for bowl championship series recognition. And if that is granted for 2012 and 2013 seasons, that would result in a significant windfall to the conference and its schools. This year, the conference had two teams that were one in the top 10, Boise State, one in the top 20, TCU, and neither one went to a BCS game because of politics. If the conference becomes an automatic qualifier for 2 years, that would mean additional money for all the member schools.
So. Yeah, that's a great example. The inequity, it's in college sports too. The Boise State misses a field goal. That costs them one, so they have one loss. They're still ranked number 7 in the nation, and they can't even get into a BCS game. They have to play teams that are down in the lower teens to for a football game. It's just not right.
Wow. Well, we're going to continue the discussion with Horace Mitchell, the president of Cal State Bakersfield. We're going to take a quick break. I'm Juanita Stevenson, and you're listening to Valley Edition.
Support for Valley Edition comes from Chevron and Avicennia Wellness Center, online at avecinia.com.
You're listening to a rebroadcast of Valley Edition. I'm Juanita Stevenson, and you're listening to Valley Edition as we continue on this topic about athletics and academics. While Fresno State wanted out of the WAC and into the Mountain West Conference, Cal State Bakersfield would like to be in the WAC. Joining me now is Dr. Horace Mitchell, president of Cal State Bakersfield. Dr. Mitchell, thanks so much for joining us today.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Very pleased to join you and enjoyed to hearing what my good colleague John Welty had to say prior.
Okay. Now, your football program, you're an affiliate of the WAC. Is that correct? You're not a full member yet. Is that the situation?
That is right. We're not yet a full member. Our baseball program is an affiliate member of the WAC, and our other sports are in several other conferences.
How does that work if your sports are all in different conferences?
Well, it's certainly a less satisfying arrangement than the one in which all sports are in the same conference. But we've just had some difficulty given all of the changes in conference affiliation where the emphasis is on football and revenues generated by football. And we don't have a football program at CSUB, and I would tell you that we're not planning to have one because it is such an expensive sport. But it also means that as decisions are made around football, conferences are making some very unusual choices in that in the past, an institution's full athletics program would be in a particular conference. Now what's happening is they're putting their football program in these more lucrative conferences and leaving the rest of their sports in other conferences. And it's that sort of thing that in some ways has reduced our opportunities for conference affiliation.
Do you think this whole thing of scrambling to find new conferences and the way that is working, is that a good thing for colleges or not so good?
My own opinion is that it's not so good in that it has the wrong priority. Historically, conference affiliations have been about institutions with similar academic values and other kinds of similarities, whereas now it's all about, you know, which affiliation provides the greatest revenue through football. And so, for example, if you look at the fact that San Diego State is now joining the Big East Conference in football and the Big West Conference for the rest of its sports, you know, there just seems to be something unusual about that.
Now, Bakersfield itself, you mounted a five-year campaign, it seems like, just to become a Division I, to have a Division I athletic program. How important do you see that for Cal State University Bakersfield?
It's very important for CSUB. And you're right, we started the process when I became president back in 2004. And so during the 2004-05 academic year, our students passed the FEBA referendum to support a move to Division I. Our community engaged in a fundraising campaign to support that as well. And at that point, it also looked like we had a good chance of getting into the Big West Conference. And so my sense was that the pieces were in place for us to move to Division I. And part of the reason we wanted to do that was that CSUB had been extremely successful in Division II with more than 30 national championships and 1,100 All-Americans. And so as we talked about being excellent in all areas, the next level of excellence for athletics was therefore Division I. And so that's why we made that jump. And the process itself is a five-year process. And so it was only last year that we became fully eligible for postseason play in Division I.
How are you hoping it will impact Cal State Bakersfield?
Well, I think we have to look at it in a fairly comprehensive kind of way. Certainly for us, Our priority is on our academic programs. That's what our mission is all about. And all of our university planning and resource allocation center around the primary role of academics. But at the same time, athletics can play a role in the sense of contributing to the quality of the student experience on campus by adding the excitement of sports. Athletics is very often also a window into the university for members of the community who perhaps have not been involved before, and so they might get involved through athletics, and then as they see other aspects of the university as a result of our staff and faculty engaging them, then they begin to look at and begin to support other areas of the university as well. And so our athletics director, interestingly, Jeff Konya, describes athletics as both a front door for the community, but also a front door for the university itself, in the sense that athletics is a point at which members of the university community, faculty, staff, and students can come together around school spirit and school support and school pride. So it's an important part of what we do, but we've been very careful in determining what is it that we can actually afford to do. I was asked quite often, what about football? And my response has been consistently, no, we won't have football because, one, our enrollment isn't high enough to support it, but secondly, because football is a very expensive sport, and very often those sports can consume as many resources as they generate. And so at most schools, the football program, unlike what most people think, does not necessarily provide support for the rest of the programs.
So does that make it difficult for schools or CSUs, some of the CSUs, you know, when you have other schools with these huge budgets who can be competitive and it costs so much, you know, to play, basically, if you want to call it that, like the big time in the big leagues, that's very difficult for some of these schools, and it seems like very difficult for a place like Cal State Bakersfield. So does that kind of leave you out of the picture?
Well, it leaves us out of the picture in terms of all these bowl changes that are going on. And certainly by not having football, it leaves us out of the picture in terms of what are referred to as sort of big-time athletics. And as you think about BCS kinds of institutions and other institutions that want to be and conferences that want to be a part of BCS. But we've been pretty clear at CSUB about what we can afford, what we can't afford. And we definitely will not extend ourselves beyond what we can afford. And in fact, even after we made the transition, as a result of the continuing budget reductions in the CSU and the continuing fee increases, which also increased the cost of an athletic scholarship, we made the decision that we needed to eliminate four of our 19 sports. 19 is high. You only need to have 14 to be in Division I. And so I made the announcement that we would drop four sports, and the community came back to ask, what would it take to retain these sports? And the answer was that they would have to be self-supporting from this point, and that there could not be the expectation that any state funding would be provided for those sports. And essentially, the community said in response to that, okay, fine. People were clearly unhappy about that, but nonetheless took the position that if that's the only way that we could continue certain sports, including wrestling, then they would do that. And so to this point in time, the community support has provided the funds necessary to continue those programs, and we will have those programs as long as that support is there.
I know I read about that. That was tough for the community there, having to drop those sports. But, Bakersfield wasn't the only CSU as we saw, not only the CSU, but some of those in the state university system also had to drop some sports teams.
Absolutely. And we do that fairly reluctantly, because when you look at athletics in terms of the big picture about how large the program is and what the costs are and how many student-athletes are involved, if you look at it at the individual level, it really speaks to what kind of opportunities are available for individual student-athletes to participate in their sport. And so when you decide to reduce or eliminate those sports, then you're also talking about cutting out opportunities for particular student-athletes. But, again, it's a choice that has to be made at times.
Well, you know, the Knight Commission, when you talk about trying to balance the needs of, a quality academic program with athletics, the Knight Commission, in a recent report, found that athletic spending between 2005-2008 increased at a rate of 4 to 11 times greater than academics, and also that the spending on athletic sports grew by 38% compared to academics, like 20%. And the Knight Commission wants the NCAA to try to implement changes. Do you agree with that? Do you think that's possible? I mean, as you heard the discussion, if you've got a very competitive big-time sports program, that will also bring money to the university.
Well, yeah. Big-time sports do have the capacity to bring money to the university, but I think we'd have to look very carefully at how many of those actually achieve that outcome. And with respect to the Knight Commission, the level of increases in spending on athletics certainly has been out of pace with the spending on academics, but I would tell you that is not something we've done at CSUB at all. Our priority is clearly on our academic mission, and we stress the academic performance of student athletes as well as their athletics performance. And so our investments in this very tough economic time have been in instruction to make sure that we're able to provide access to as many students as possible, and that once they are enrolled, that we provide for them the set of courses that are necessary for them to be successful and work toward graduation.
Well, Dr. Mitchell, we thank you so much for joining us, and good luck on your move to Division I sports, and we appreciate you calling in today.
Oh, my pleasure, and anytime.
Thank you.
Okay, take care.
You're listening to a rebroadcast of Valley Edition.
Welcome back. I'm Juanita Stevenson, and you're listening to Valley Edition. New census data shows that Fresno has the highest poverty rate in California, now at 26.8%. That means 250,000 people statewide, 250,000 people here in Fresno County alone living in poverty. Now, statewide, that rate is at 15.8%. Today, we are talking to some of those who are working on the front lines to assist those in need. Joining me is AP. He's the General Operations Manager of the Neighborhood Thrift. And we also have Deatra Latin, Community Food with the Community Food Bank. And also joining us from Visalia will be Iris East, Development Director of Visalia Emergency Aid Council. First of all, Anthony Armour, known as AP, explain to us the concept of neighborhood thrift. Because you guys, you're more of self-help. You're trying to get people to work, back to work.
Yeah, well, essentially, we're just trying to find what assets the people in our community, in our neighborhood, what do they actually have already, and how can we build upon those things to just to have them help themselves get back and re-enter into the job force. You know, I think a lot of times, you have a criminal record, or you may be a second or third generation welfare recipient, or you come from immigrant family. These are things that just naturally kind of pigeonhole you into a rut that's hard to get out of. And so we just try to help them through just basic job skills, the vocational training, like working in the register, working in the warehouse. You know, if you can smile, operate a calculator, and stand on your feet for, you know, 3 hours, you'd be a great cashier. You know, if you can lift 25 pounds worth of weight, warehouse training, boom. You know, so, yeah, essentially we just try to take people's junks from their garages and turn those into paychecks for people in our community.
Okay. We see this every year, though, at the Community Food Bank. And as far as this year, the need, we know we're in the midst of an economic downturn. What has that meant? What have you all seen as far as the people and the families you always assist?
Well, it's a couple of things. Definitely it's the changing face of hunger because of the economic downturn. We always say it's no longer really about the person who we see standing on a street corner and that kind of stuff. But that face of hunger just looks like the rest of us sitting around today. And so we see families, we're seeing more and more children come through the doors just looking for help these days. So it's a little bit tougher.
What about UAP, the people that you get in who you're trying to assist with jobs? Are you seeing different people coming in, trying to find work and different things to help assist and sustain their families?
Oh, most definitely. You know, we've only been in business about 3.5 years. And I'd say in most recent times, probably this last year specifically, we're seeing people who just, you look on the street, you know, who are truly marginalized. They may have a car. They may have a home. They're not, like, directly homeless in extreme poverty. But they're people just like you and me who, you know, who just are trying to get by and live a normal life, you know. And, yeah, I think you're mm-hmm. right. I think the face of poverty is changing drastically.
How big of an impact do you think the economic downturn has had on what all you all are trying to do at Neighborhood Thrift?
Oh, man. I know it's kind of weird to say, but I feel like we've been very fortunate and it's truly blessed to be able to survive and sustain ourselves the past few years. I think we went into business just at the right time and you know, be able to provide cheap, affordable items to people who are in need. And in that process, able to grow and expand and have a farther reach in our neighborhoods.
We do have Iris East, the development director with the Visalia Emergency Aid Council, with us now. Your agency, it's my understanding, you provide emergency food, shelter, clothing, and relief services to Tulare County families. Tell us about what you've seen. We're talking about this new face of poverty. Are you seeing different kind of people than what you normally service?
Yes, that is correct. Here at Visalia Emergency Aid, what we're seeing is a whole different group of people coming in. Basically, it's a lot of the people who used to give us support, donate to us, sponsor to us. And because of the economy, they've lost their jobs themselves, and now they are seeking help from us, you know, food to feed their families. And a lot of it is, you know, people, secretarial types of jobs, construction workers, just, you know, a whole different group of people coming in compared to what we're used to servicing.
You know, I want all of you to sort of answer this question, you know, because in this region, having a lot of people in poverty is nothing new. We've always dealt with high unemployment, high poverty level, that sort of thing, low education levels. You know, what can each of you say to the public to let them know that what we're seeing now is different? It's not the same old thing, and that it's truly impacting our community in a different way.
Well, I can say this. It's just over the time frame. I've been with Community Food Bank now about 10 years. And so when we talk about this is really different, it's the massive amount of people who are coming in. It's not just, we're no longer serving 25,000 people on a weekly basis. We're serving 60,000 people on a weekly basis. And those numbers are huge. We've gone from distributing 7.5 million pounds of food to 24 million pounds of food on a yearly basis. And that number breaks my heart because technically I want to work myself out of a job. And so to be able to say that, you know, I agree with Iris, on the fact that now I have donors who used to give to us who now need our services. What are we supposed to do? How do we meet that need? But it takes each one of us coming together and saying, you know what, if I can give a little bit, it makes a huge difference. So, you know, at the food bank, we talk about every dollar we can buy $8 worth of food, and that's phenomenal. You know, I think at the food bank, too, we need to look at and really examine the effectiveness of some of our programs, because there's job training programs that we can bring to the Central Valley. And our clients, I think the biggest thing that I hear is they want to work.
Yes.
They don't want to be in our lines. They want to work. They don't want to come to one of our agencies to get a bag of food. They want to be able to go out there and get on the workforce and provide meals themselves for their families.
And I'm sure, AP, because what you all try to do is provide jobs. I'm sure that's what people are telling you. They probably will come in and try to do anything because they want to work.
It's just really difficult, you know, because we try to help people just by, you know, nice items at an affordable rate. But also, the job piece is there. And it's almost overwhelming sometimes. I'm not as seasoned or veteran as a lot of people have been doing this for years and years, you know, and it's a tough battle. But, you know, I think Fresno, it's a great place of opportunity. You know, like what's beautiful about the city, you can show up with a whisper and still have a huge voice. And so I think just for the general public, I think, you know, just a few things by putting a name to the faces that you see on the street, you know, finding out, you know, what's actually happening in your neighborhood. You know, you can't meet needs if you're not suffering them yourselves, you know.
Right. And Iris?
Yes. No, I totally agree with what both of them said. You know, I think sometimes we forget that it could be our own neighbors, you know, right next door to us that are suffering. But if we're not paying attention, we'll never know. You know, my kids are in school, and they go to school with kids themselves who are needing help. And I just think we just need to all be aware of our surroundings and what people are going through with the economy the way it is. I know I've been here at Vice Emergency Aid for 4 years now, and I've seen the children in lines with their families just grow and grow and grow as each month, you know, goes by, and it's sad. You know, I come into work, and half the times our pantries are empty, and we don't ever want to get to the point where we have to turn families away, especially the children, because that's, you know, what we're all about is taking care of the children and their families. And it's just, you know, people just need to remember a dollar goes a long ways. I know for us, $10 feeds a family of four for, you know, a couple of weeks to a month, and they don't have to donate $50 or $100. I mean, every penny counts, and it does, you know, go a long ways.
Okay, each of you, I'd like for you to kind of talk about your needs at this point as far as what you're trying to do to help people right now. You know, the holiday times are usually a time of giving. I know you all have needs year-round, but while people are in the giving mode, if what would be at the top of your wish list, starting with you, Deatra?
Well, for us at Community Food Bank, it's always money. A dollar for us, like I said before, goes a long way. That's $8 worth of food. It's cheaper than you and I walking into a grocery store and buying bags and bringing it over to the food bank. The other thing is just I encourage people to educate themselves on really, truly what's happening right here in the Central Valley. What I found is sometimes when people choose not to give, it's because they have a lack of education about what's happening and understanding what we were talking about before in the neighborhoods. And so not only do we need your funding, we need people to stand up and give that money, but we need people to also understand what's happening in the valley and looking at where they can make a difference. Sometimes it's taking the time to just smile at somebody as they're standing in line instead of saying, why are you in line and why do you have that nice car and what's going on with you? Take the time to encourage them. Take the time to maybe hire somebody that you wouldn't hire in the past. And so because there's businesses here that are thriving. And then I think we need to find ways to encourage small businesses to grow, too. And whether it's shopping local or whatever that may be, I just encourage people to give of their time, educate themselves of what's happening in the community, and get involved.
Because there are things people can do. Mm-hmm. And not to be so quick to judge, I think what we have to remember that a lot of people have been who normally would not be have been impacted by the economic downturn. So please, you know, think about, you know, the people at City Hall who've been laid off. Think about the teachers who've been laid off. Think about some of the various companies in Fresno who've laid off people, skilled people. Those people are now out there. So, I mean, I think people really need to think about that it's not what it used to be. Mm-hmm. Now, getting to your wish list, AP, I know you all have a very different, unique kind of Christmas drive that you do.
Well, I think the ways that people can help us, what we're already doing, you know, first of all, just donating your unwanted stuff. You know, if you have a couch that's in your garage, it's been there since the 70s, just give us a call. We'll come pick that up, you know, and if you have a bag of clothes and try to clean out your closet, same thing. We, you know, with our business model, we try to take things that are unwanted and recycle it and make that purposeful for somebody else, and in turn turn that into a paycheck. And during the Christmas season, just real quick, you know, we started a thing called Mission Christmas with our various business partnerships and church partnerships. We have people that donate brand new toys, and we discount them from 70% to 50% off. And that's just another opportunity for people in our neighborhood to buy brand new items at a cheap, affordable rate. And it's just a way to empower people to have the opportunity to give. I think oftentimes, you know, we give out of charity, which is a great thing, but oftentimes I feel like we sometimes rob families of the opportunity to give themselves. So you know, they can buy hundreds of dollars worth of merchandise, brand new toys for their kids, for maybe $25. If they can't afford it, they can volunteer in our store, and then we provide them with a voucher.
Okay, I like that. Iris, your wish list?
Our wish list, is basically the same. I think it's every other food bank and nonprofit that are striving to help the needy in our community. And I know for us, we have a Christmas Eve distribution that we do on Christmas Eve morning, and we take care of a little over 5,500 children on that morning. We try and provide a hot meal for the families and a toy blanket and a jacket for the children. And I know that, you know, people can get out there and donate those gently used jackets, scarves, hats, blankets. We're in desperate need of those. We not only give those out to our children, but we do hand those out to our elderly clients as well. Food, I know. This past Thanksgiving, you know, we're used to taking care of anywhere around 1,200 to 1,400 families, and due to donations being down, we had to turn away some families, and that's not something that we want to do. So, you know, same as everybody else, monetary donations are great because we have places that we can go and buy food and get them at a better price. Turkeys, chickens, hams, I mean, we'll take everything. These families, you know, they end up at our gates lining up 2 days prior to Christmas Eve morning, and it's a sad sight to see because they want to make sure that they are not forgotten, that they are not left out of receiving a meal or a toy for their child. So, you know, toys, monetary donations, I mean, you know, we're open to everything, and we need it all desperately, so.
Okay. Thank you all so much. Anthony Armour with Neighborhood Thrift, Deatra Latin, Community Food Bank, and Iris East, Development Director, Visalia Emergency Aid Council. You have the names of all those agencies if you're looking for a place to give this holiday season. Well, that is all for today's Valley Edition. You can hear audio archives and subscribe to our podcast online at kbpr.org. We welcome your comments and suggestions. You can email us at talk@kbpr.org. For audio engineer Marv Allen, producer Tracy Sharman, production and operations manager Don Weaver, and executive producer Joe Moore, I'm Juanita Stevenson, and this is Valley Edition on Valley Public Radio.
Support for Valley Edition comes from the James Irvine Foundation, Cahuilla Delta Medical Center, and Kaiser Permanente.